Phil DiBella, welcome to the HR Cartel podcast.
Timmy, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. This is a good one. You're a real advocate for small businesses, and especially in the hospitality sector. And I think that's why I think we share a lot of firm views in how small businesses can operate in Australia and how regulators treat them. And I think they don't get a fair go. You've more so in that hospitality specific area, but you do a lot more with more of a variety of businesses these days, don't you? You've got a whole range of different businesses you're a part of, a mentor and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So with the Coffee Commune, it's a facility on one side, and on the other side, it's a community. So it's like a hospitality chamber of commerce, approaching 1,000 members, but we've got a quarter of all of Brisbane cafes a part of it and approaching half of Brisbane's cafes, so over 600 now. But we've also got lawyers, accountants, HR professionals, plumbers, electricians, anyone that does business in the hospitality industry and sector. So we get a cross-reference of data. We're dealing with a lot of different businesses, but they're all specializing in or working in hospitality. Of course, that's our area of expertise. One of the things we do a lot is with startups. So on the facility side, we've got 86 roasters and growing, working out of the Coffee Commune as a co-working space. Some use it for breakdowns, some use it for overflow, but half of them are startups. So yeah, my passion is all around small business, especially startups. And when I was a young fella, I'm 49 now, but when I was 10 years old, 11 years old, I was aspirational and inspired to want to go and open my own business. And I think that's going to be falling away if some of us don't do some good work in this space.
Yeah, I've got to agree. I have to agree. And before we get too far ahead, you should probably give a lot more explanation on your background.
Yeah.
Of course, the beloved famous coffee.
Started as a startup, 2002, started a startup, one-man band, and went on to be Australia's largest specialty coffee company, 140 staff. So, of course, I learned a lot through that period, from a university graduate to a worker working for somebody else, to then a startup working on my own, to a sole trader, small business, obviously, to then progressing to a small medium business, to then a medium business. And a lot of learnings in all areas, obviously, a lot of touch points. We were a fully integrated coffee business, so we weren't just a coffee, so we barista. Well, no, we actually were crop to cup, and we coined those words, and they belong to DiBella. We dealt with the farmers, so therefore we were obviously a procurement business. We're an import business, so we had to deal with the American dollar, logistics, all the rest of it that goes with that. Then obviously we were a manufacturing business, manufacturing coffee. Then we're a sales business because we're selling coffee. We're a marketing business because we're building our own brand. We're a distribution business because we did the whole lot A to Z in-house. So a lot of learnings, a lot of growth, 22 years in business and still learning and growing. And of course, we're Australia-wide. We went international, did stuff in India. I've still got Coffee by DiBella in India with the business partner. We did stuff in Thailand there with the Dark Group who own H&M and those guys in Asia. We did stuff in China and opened Abbotsford Road in Brooklyn, New York, which I've sold out my share now and it's still going. Yeah, I've got a pretty wide range across the place. And of course, dealing in coffee countries. So it's all of Central and South America, Papua New Guinea, India, Africa, all the countries that grow coffee. So you've been able to build a bit of a wisdom library so far from all over the world and different types of in businesses, but all within the hospitality and coffee industry.
Yeah, and a significant venture and undertaking too, considering you started with about 5,000 and turned it into about 50 million or so.
Correct.
Sold that, and then you've grown something even bigger now, I would say.
Yeah, it is. It's a start. I mean, 3 years in, some people said I was mad doing it in the middle of COVID, but COVID actually fast-forwarded the opportunity because a lot of businesses are hurting, still are hurting. The industry's gone through some real shakeups, and we're there to help them solve their problems. We're there to help them accelerate their potential, help them be efficient, help them be sustainable, help them be profitable and grow. And using my many years of 34 years in hospitality, 22 years in owning my own businesses, I think there's a lot there I can do to help and am helping, but there's a lot of work to be done. I'm a big believer in community. I'm a big believer in shared economy, shared knowledge, putting the right people around you. That's why with the Carajo board that I chair, that you sit on, I really love that sort of stuff. They say your first work life, your first is a job, your second is a career, and your third your calling. And I think I've moved into that calling where I can help others accelerate their potential, which is as a strategic marketer and brander, which is my background.
Yep.
If you want to make it clinical, I'm a strategy marketer and a branding expert. There's so much that we can do to help, and there's a lot of businesses that need it right now.
Yeah, touching on your branding comment just then, there's something that I think will be a good question to ask you. When I look at and talk to marketing people and branding experts and that sort of thing, we happily and celebrate the fact that we'll proactively discriminate against types of people.
Yeah.
To create your brand persona. Mm. And that's smart because your business has to talk to a market somewhere and you've got to target and be really specific and clear in the market. Mm. Then you introduce HR into the mix. And HR will go and essentially, I think, disconnect your business, your workforce from the client because they're going to force down your throat that every single type of person belongs and must belong and all that sort of stuff. And in my view, that's a serious disconnect from what the business created in the first place.
Yeah, totally.
Can you reconcile that, or is that just...
Yeah, no, it is. And I think the biggest problem, Tim, is, and take it from someone that went from a startup of one person to 140, is that a lot of people grow without knowing. And I've always made sure, and I've said, I was a startup. I didn't know how to run a business. I certainly didn't know how to run a business when it got to 10 people, 20 people, 30 people. So I surrounded myself with the right people. I went out to organizations. I subcontracted out to people like yourself and marketers and others that I needed to bring into the realm, not thinking that I knew everything. But the one thing that I kept at the core and center was the people. And I always talk about, and I still do today, that it's about your internal people and your external people. What people go wrong, and I've seen it so many times now because I'm an in-house entrepreneur in residence for BDO, and there's 700 people in Queensland, right? So I've worked with larger organisations. I've done some work with Wyndham. I was on their chairing their advisory board for the president at one stage for 2 years to work through some issues that they were having, their 3,000 staff. So been part of some pretty big groups and seen how they operate. And both Wyndham and BDO do things really well, because they don't forget the human and the people element. A lot of companies go wrong is because they become about processes and strategy. So, of course, you need process and you need strategy, but you need to humanize them. And what happens when companies start to put HR departments in, it becomes tick and flick. They lose the humanity side. For people listening and go, well, reconcile what Tim said, it's pretty simple. Never forget that it's about the human. It's about people. So in this case, with human resource, HR means human resources. It's HR management, right? So it's managing human resources, so managing humans. Now, that clinically has an issue with me. You manage things. You don't manage people. You lead people, right? And that's where, if you say, Phil, give us the short answer, you don't manage people, you manage things, you lead people, and this is what happens. So therefore, what cascades down is people build policies and strategies, and they make it about the policy and the strategy. They don't make it about the person. You've still got to humanize it. It's about the person.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I've spent time in larger businesses. I've worked in at the time, the biggest business, the most successful business in the world when it was BHP.
Yeah.
Very large HR teams and that sort of thing. And I really found when I was exposed to that working environment that the skills that we create as HR professionals are completely wasted and lost in that environment, because big tier one operators essentially control the HR profession, in my view. And the reason for that is because they're the ones with the highest paying jobs. They're the ones that have all the fragmented HR options in their businesses. So HR people have more diverse options to run their career and chase different pathways in one single organization. They're the ones that control what HR do because they're paying the big dollars and HR protect all that around them. But the businesses who need the HR capability the most, especially when we've got such an overreaching government right now and very excited regulators, smaller employees need it. You know, it's out of reach for them because to get a decent HR person in your organization working for you Monday to Friday, you're paying at least 150K these days.
Yeah.
To get someone
minimum.
Right. Yeah. Now, that person's not going to want to do all the detailed work either. So you're going to have another person you have to hire as well, and systems and all sorts of things. Pretty quickly, your investment's going to be $500,000 a year.
Mm-mm.
Small businesses can't do that.
Yeah. And that's why they should outsource. And that's what we talk about. And that's what, you know, is that I say to people when I'm working with businesses, and obviously I work with small business all the time, is you don't need to have an in-house HR. I actually prefer not to have an in-house HR. You outsource it, but have somebody that is responsible for your people and your culture. So I'm a bigger fan of PNCs, right? So a PNC person, the people and culture. Now, a PNC person doesn't need to actually be qualified. A PNC person needs to be qualified human, meaning they know how to humanize things. They know they need to show values of care, authenticity, integrity, passion. And if they've got those qualities, then they're gonna make a great PNC person. Small businesses should be outsourcing HR to organizations like yourself. They should be, if it becomes an IR issue and they need specialized advice, go to an IR specialist lawyer or an IR specialist that does that sort of stuff. But that's where we go wrong, is in the tick and flick. Oh, you get to an organization of 30, I don't even know what the legislation is now. 30 people, you must have an in-house HR person. But why? As long as I have the processes, strategies, systems, and everything in play that keep my people safe and happy. Because really, what is the function of a HR person? I'm the expert, right? For the listeners, something I don't talk a lot about. I've actually got a HR degree. Right? So I did HR at uni, and that's where I know a fair bit about theory book HR that I never wanted to practice. Right? And then I worked in an organization for 8 years that treated people like shit. And you can have an HR person, but if they're treating people. So that makes up the background and what the fundamentals of what I'm talking about here is that you actually want your people safe and happy. To me, when you say, what is the function of a PNC person or a HR person? It's to have your people in your organization, no matter if you're an organization of one or an organization of 1,000+, you want them safe and you want them happy. And what's happened along the way from an experience, and I'm not an HR expert because I haven't practiced HR, but what's happened as a business leader, a business owner that's grown businesses, worked in other businesses, consulted to businesses, is that they forget the purpose, and the purpose is safe and happy. So if you think of a funnel and you put everything in the funnel and you're a HR leader and you're listening to this, then you should be, or you're a leader of business or you're leading people or you've got a small business, right? If you put HR up the top, and you build a funnel and you put all the ingredients in the middle, what you want spitting at the bottom is safe and happy. And if processes, strategies, systems, all these sort of things don't lead or result in safe and happy, then you're wasting your time and you're wasting your resources. So back to your point, what HR professionals in big organizations do is they create work for work's sake. Because like you said, a HR director in a decent organization is on what, 350,000+? So they're protecting themselves. They're justifying their jobs. They're doing a lot of what government does. Yeah. And that's not me making a throwaway statement. I've worked with these people, and most HR people in those organizations don't like me because of that reason, because I just call us. But coming back to it, people that are listening to this, especially small business, HR, the function of HR is to keep people safe and keep them happy. And, of course, under the banner of safe is not just safe as in environment, psychologically safe, equipment safe, regulations and all that sort of stuff safe, but safe in terms of the turning up to work in the right hours, not doing shifts too long, not doing shifts too short, because that's not keeping somebody safe either. And then happy. Happy is all about growth as well. Where are they today? Where do they want to be in 3 years? What's their career progression? What are they doing for personal, professional, and family, not just professional, so caring about them. So if you think about, some people might say, well, safe and happy is very generic. No, safe and happy is not generic at all, because if you break down the fundamentals of what keeps a worker safe and what keeps a worker happy, then you have a myriad of different things you have to address.
Yeah, you're right. I really love how you make things really simple to understand. And that's the approach I think needs to be taken when it comes to introducing HR or HR systems or people or theories into your business. In my view, I'm with you. I think HR is best served outside of your business. Mm. I've got an experience that I've had over the last 20 years. I see the magic number being around 15 to 20 people. When you get to that point, you've got to start putting in structures and rigor and that sort of thing. Up to that point, the leader can have an individual relationship pretty easily, pretty well with every person there. Mm. The same message gets given to every person there pretty easily.
Mm.
Now, when your business grows, you might have 10 different sort of streams of activity or departments, each with 20 people in it. You've got 10 leaders who can have those conversations with everybody pretty effectively, and an overall leader who can speak to 10 other leaders.
Yeah.
So I think HR should be external until you hit about 200 people, really.
But the key there, Tim, and this is what I find happens is, and it happens not just HR, right? It happens with marketing. Oh, we've got a marketing department. Oh, so I forget about marketing now as a manager and I give it to a department. No, everybody in your organization needs to market. Everybody in your organization needs to have some level of skill in managing humans, right? And I'm sure you'll agree with it because I know you've done a lot of work around that with people, and that's what a lot of what you do with organizations is a proactive approach to HR. And for the listeners to understand is you don't shove it off to a department, which is what normally happens, and then your leaders forget. Don May from Domino's, one of the world's best CEOs and a good friend, and I love having – we have these chats all the time. And he said, for one of the biggest step changes I made in the business many years ago is that I empowered all of my managers, all of my middle managers got taught and went through courses on how to manage people better, right? And I took that responsibility away from a HR department and I gave it to the middle managers to manage their people and engage with them emotionally. And then I gave the compliance stuff, I put an IR lawyer in, the legal team. So I actually broke out and separated the human side of it, right, and the legality side of it. And he said the change they had in the business was phenomenal. Now, Don's one of the most forward-thinking, visionary entrepreneurs there is, right? Barry Robinson, who's the president of Wyndham Resort and a dear friend of mine in my YPO group, he's got 3,000 staff globally. And he does exactly something. Yeah, he's got a HR director, but the HR director is part of the exec team. But then the HR director's job is actually to make sure that all the managers and the middle managers are trained on how to manage humans. And I don't see that in a lot of big organizations. I don't know about BHP, you worked in there. But to me, it keeps coming down to the fundamental of, are we keeping our people safe and happy? Are we empowering our middle managers? Because people forget that terminology, right? Our middle managers. So that middle level, not the C-suite, the next level and the next level down. Are we empowering our middle managers to really, or equipping them with the skills and making them conscious that they need to keep people safe and happy? And sorry, I don't need a government department, some potato sitting in a bloody office desk going, today we're going to implement this new law. And they have no idea,
yeah,
you know, what they're doing. In our industry, Tim, and we've spoken about this, Peter Dutton came in, and I wasn't a fan of Scott Morrison, but when they were in government, Peter Dutton was fantastic. Picked up the phone, middle of COVID, Phil, what can we do to help your industry? You're one of Australia's leading authorities in this, in hospitality. Tell us what we can do. Peter, we don't have any staff. No one's got any staff. You need to raise the 407 capping of 20 hours a week. Bang, within a week it was done. Now it stayed in play. We get a new prime minister. He keeps it there for a few months. October last year, he goes, in 6 weeks' time, 407 visas go back to 24 hours a week, 48-hour fortnights. And everyone's just like, firstly, no consultation, no collaboration. It's a dictatorship. You don't know hospitality industry. You're not using any consciousness whatsoever. We're 3% unemployment. So it's not like unemployment's at 12% and locals can't get jobs. We're at 3% unemployment, right? We've had a million people the moment that the international borders opened, a million people left Australia, right? A lot of them were in hospitality and construction, hence why both industries are really suffering for staff, yeah, right? And you come along and go, oh, 24-hour capping a week, but it gets better. And obviously part of what we do at the Communist Advocacy, I turned around and said, but who can survive on 24 hours a week work? So what do we have? We all of a sudden have a lot of resignations. One, because they can't do more than 24 hours a week. Mm. Two, you're bringing back the cash economy because people are going to have to survive. So employers go, I need the staff. So unfortunately, they do what they shouldn't be doing, yeah, right, with the cash economy. But the government's led that charge and you know, has forced people to do it. And I'm not saying it's right, but you made a ripple decision that's had a tsunami effect on a business. But the big one is, how many people have left the country and gone back because they can't afford to live off 24 hours a week?
Yeah.
So one stupid decision from somebody sitting in government has now just affected the industry, but affected people without thinking, without collaboration, without consultation. And you're seeing it left, right, and center. When you share stuff at our advisory board, and one of the reasons why I love having you on the board, not just because you're learning and growing and developing, but you're sharing your expertise with Tim. There's 14 other business people around that table that are flabbergasted with the stuff you're sharing, yeah, which is concerning. Some are small business, some are big business, and they don't even know what's going on out there until you're telling them. That's, yeah, the scary part for me.
It is, yeah. And even law firms struggle to keep up right now. Mm. The last 18 months has been chaos in law changes and amendments and that sort of thing. And you're right. You know, you've got government making decisions that force businesses to do workarounds because you can't find people anyway. And those people who you can find, like student visa holders and other types of visa holders that have limited and restricted working hours, you're right, they can't afford to live on that sort of money. So they willingly take up workarounds. Now, the Fair Work Ombudsman targets your industry, cafes, for example. They do that all the time.
Mm.
They're going to go and do some spot audits on different, yeah, cafes, yeah, hit different areas with their inspectors. As of January next year, you're going to go to jail. Mm. They're going to put you in jail, right? Now, the government created that problem for you, created the challenges and the difficulty for the people to even live off that wage. And now if you try and get around that, the Fair Work Ombudsman now...
They have the power, yeah.
They can now put you in jail.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's no joke. We've got a very excited regulator in Anna Booth, the new Fair Work Ombudsman.
Mm-hmm. It's very scary, actually.
It really is. And, yeah, given recent KPMG reports on the Ombudsman's activities themselves since they took control of union conduct regulation, that sort of thing is scary as well. We might get into that at some point. But you're right, it's a very dangerous regulator that we're facing right now. Mm. And smaller businesses aren't exempt. They are exempt from some, yeah, things.
And ignorance is not a defense. No, that's what people, right, need to listen to, that are listening to this. Ignorance is not a defense. They can go as hard as they like. It's black and white. And that's one of the problems we have. And hence why podcasts like this, when I follow your podcast, because you're always releasing stuff I have no idea about, are important, because ignorance is not a defense. And the government actually says it's our responsibility as business owners or business leaders to actually be equipped and know what the law changes are.
Yep.
But how hard is it to know what the law changes are? It's not like they publish it on a one page and go, today's changes are blah, 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 blah. You've got to go digging. You've got to go searching. And let's face it, while small business is hurting and a lot of people are working in their business, who's got the time to do it?
Yeah.
So if obviously that's where I've said to you, that's one of the solutions that you can really help people with, not only with your podcast, but with your services and your website, is to help people navigate that. And it's obviously an opportunity, but that is the scary thing, because the downside is people got to realize it's no laughing matter. You can go to jail. Very simple. And it'll be at the discretion of, they might let some go and they might push others hard like they do. The ATO's on a rampage at the moment. They're pulling no punches. They said, we're going after hospitality. There's billions of dollars out there that we need and we're going to collect it. So they're going hard on all industries, but they came out publicly not long ago and said, we're chasing hospitality for people to make sure that they got their taxes up to date and paying their debts, because we need money. And unfortunately, that's what happens when governments mismanage money. They need money. I say this a lot and people still don't get it. Governments don't generate money. They collect money from the taxpayer. Whether you pay a dollar in tax or millions in tax, you're still contributing to the system. They collect the money and they distribute the tax. That's why we do need to give a shit what they're doing with our money. We do need to make sure we keep them accountable for projects they start, stop, without letting anyone know, because otherwise you get policies and systems and changes happening that are happening and we have no say in it. So it's not a joke. It really is. And that's why Tim Gandhi's words, be part of the change you want to see in the world. You hear me say them all the time. When people say to me, why do you bother? You've done well in business. You can retire. I said, firstly, I like my life too much and my wife, she'll probably divorce me if I retire. And that wouldn't be a good thing because I'd drive her mad. But I want to be part of the change I want to see in the world. And that's what drives me, because I praise the government when they do good things. But I tell you what, I'm going to hold them accountable when they do bad things. Because in my lifetime and counting, I'm up to $33 million plus in personal tax that me and my wife have paid. And I don't mind. But I tell you, I certainly would like to see them spend it better. Mm. I would like them to see them help people that need it better. I would like to see them to tax the people that take the money out of this country. Like they go and give tax concessions to Microsoft and to Tesla and to all these people. Well, they got to be here anyway.
Yeah.
You're telling me Tesla's not coming to Australia because they've got to pay tax? Of course they're coming. You're telling me Microsoft's not coming? You're telling me Apple's not? They need to be in Australia. So why are you giving them tax concessions to operate in Australia? Because again, it comes back to your thing. There's a flow down effect. The more money we waste, the more money they need, the more taxes they implement, the more legislation they put in place. And then you start to get this. And that's why I say there's a ripple that starts in the ivory tower and it turns into a tsunami for the small business or for business in general, but especially small business. Because you've got to remember, small business doesn't have that fluidity. It doesn't have the gap in the ceiling to absorb the crap. And that's something to really think about. Big business, because everyone's hurting. I put a post up today about the cash splash from the Premier. Yeah, somebody that's earning $1 million a year is still affected by the disposable income squeeze as somebody who's earning $100,000 a year. Yeah, but it's just, of course, the gap here is a lot bigger. So they're still diminishing their income.
Yeah.
But okay, they've got more to play with. Over here, you've got less to play with. Now, that's the same with small business. Small business has a smaller gap to play. So every time that somebody comes along and makes these rule changes and these law changes and adds another level of red tape, another level of compliance, adds another stupid decision like the 407 visas, you're squeezing the gap and small business doesn't have any gap left. Yeah. Big business has a bigger gap. So, yeah, it's coming down. But, hey, the banks post an $8 billion profit, not a $10 billion profit.
Yeah, it's a bit more scary than that when I think about it in my world. We've got a lot of construction industry clients. It's very difficult for them. They've got very narrow margins. They've got long-term projects. They've got things to manage that break them. And we've seen thousands and thousands of them go belly up in the last 3 years for a range of reasons, obviously. But the over-regulation and things that you're alluding to there end up, they do hit tier one operators. They do. But it actually benefits this left side of politics that's in play right now. Now, look, both sides of politics make bad decisions as well. So this isn't about criticising one side or the other. However, the current party in play right now is run and pushed by unions. There's no questioning that, no doubt about that. There's no one even denying that. It's out in the open. These tier ones in the construction sector, these tier ones end up better off because these smaller businesses that are going belly up and that sort of thing, their business has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Unions don't like small business. They hate them. They don't want people in.
But they don't benefit from them.
Exactly. So the unions and tier one operators pretend they hate each other. It's a bit of I guess they do have difficulties and challenges, but they don't really hate each other. But unions rely on tier ones being healthy and having all the business because they get more power to lobby the government to control tier ones.
Mm.
they get more rights, more workplace regulations authorities, as we're seeing right now. More union fees, more super paid to their superannuation companies and all sorts of things. So it's a dispersion of money in a bit of a different way, and a way that the government can pay back the unions for the millions of dollars of donations they give to get them elected in the first place. The second that unions start getting pushback from these bigger tier ones, they get a little bit right now, but it's just a game, really. They don't really get that much pushback. If tier ones start to really push back, these unions don't just stop what they're doing. Like they change their targets. And regulators aren't going to shy away from targeting smaller businesses when that happens. Unions certainly won't. So, yeah, smaller businesses really do get it from all angles.
But so as an expert, what can small business do to be more proactive?
They need to prepare for the regulation they're about to get hit with. If I'm going to extrapolate out from what we've seen the last 2 to 5 years and look 5 years ahead, 10 years ahead, and if I'm going to read the Federal Ombudsman's Statement of Intent and Tony Burke, the IR Minister's request of the Ombudsman for their intent, if we put all that together, we know what's going to happen. And regulation's going to increase. That's what's happening. You can only regulate more and more so much before the bigger end of town says, no, fuck you. This is enough. And that's when it goes to smaller businesses. So it is coming to smaller businesses. The exemptions you've enjoyed for a while are going to be taken away, such as this small business fair dismissal code, which many small businesses might know about, but it's some flexibility. It's like if you want to, your employee's probation period is 12 months rather than 6, for example. If you make someone redundant, you don't have to pay it because you're a small business. All that stuff is going to be eroded away the longer this regulator stays in power. Prepare for that. Right. So let's look forward. You need to be ahead of what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
You've got to talk to people who have an interest in your business surviving, and not HR consultants, unfortunately, come out of tier ones and they try to bring that big business mindset into your small business, talk to you about diversity, equity, inclusion, and all this stuff, which is a fine conversation to have in those bigger businesses.
Yeah.
Fuck all that. You've got bigger things to worry about.
Yeah, you've got survival on the table.
Yeah.
And anyway, the small businesses, Tim, that I work with, and there's, like I said, there's lots of them, they're already inclusive. They're already progressive. They're already doing, they don't discriminate on hire of male or female. You think about it. And listeners, challenge me on it. Go and chat to a small business operator that's got 2 staff or 5 staff. So clinically, it's 1 to 19 staff. Go on to talk to somebody that's got under 20 staff and say to them, do you pay different for men or females? And I'll be very shocked that you might get 1 in 100, right? Do you hire women over men or men over women? They look at you like you're crazy. Do you have policies in place? No, I don't have a policy in place to keep my staff safe and happy. We do it as a business as usual. That's my experience of small business, right? They're right across small, safe and happy, but they do it as business as usual. They don't do it. They don't need governments or unions or anyone else coming in and slapping them and going, hey, this is now going to be your process and your protocol. And if you don't, we're going to fine you. Because everything in this country, I have to say, geez, it mesmerizes me. And this came from an Italian that went back to Italy. It was very successful here, set up a string of gelati shops, and then said, you know what? This is too hard. We've made our money. We're going back to Italy. And he goes, I love the way that everything in Australia is a problem until they give you a fee. It's pollution. But if you pay, there's no more pollution. Oh, it's carbon tax. It's bad for the environment. But if you pay a carbon tax, it's not good. The environment's okay now. And this is an Italian that set up a very successful string of ice cream bars here and then many years ago and then went back and went, I can't deal with the hypocrisy of the country anymore. Great country to start, a great country to have a go, to get going, all the things that we're known for that we're fast diminishing. But he said, but it's ridiculous, the hypocrisy within the country. And as listeners, think about that. It is hypocrisy. They want you to have a go and start a business. Great. So we do. We have a go, we start a small business. All right. Now I'm going to talk about some stuff that most people don't know about. And I can tell you that because my staff never knew, but I made sure I kept telling them. So yeah, have a go, start a business. I did 2002, one man band, $5,000. Put it up, used my brains, worked with other people, used somebody else's roaster, worked out of my garage, got clearance to make sure that was okay, started to build a company. By 2005, we're the biggest in Queensland. I'm employing about 20 people. And along comes payroll tax. So we want you to build a company. We want you to grow. We want you to employ more people. It's great for our country. It's great for our state. It's fantastic. But we're going to tax you. Okay. And people will be listening going, what the fuck? Yeah. So in Queensland, once your payroll hits over 1.3 million, you get charged a tax. You get charged a tax to employ people. So the more people you employ, the more tax you pay. Think about that if that's not morally wrong. We want you to own your own home and we want you to be fruitful and buy an investment property. Right. So you buy investment property, and if you're lucky, you buy another one. And then they hit you with land tax. And people go, what's land tax? Any property outside of your residential property is then incurred an extra tax called land tax. And people go, oh, so I pay tax to own an extra property. Yes, you do. Okay, so they're encouraging me to do well and build business, but now I'm getting taxed. Oh, we want you to grow your business. Have a go. Go for it. Now, if your business is doing bad, you can't go to the government and say, give me money, right? They say, I'm not your business partner. And people go, they're not really, so why should they give you money? Oh, but here comes the clincher. When you build a business, say, for $100,000, it costs you. You sell it for $1 million. You ready for it, listeners? The government's entitled to a quarter of the profit of the $900,000. So if you go to them asking for money because you're treating them like a business partner, they tell you to piss off. But yet when you sell, your sell price minus your setup cost, they get a quarter of that, and that's called capital gains tax. And what people don't realize is there's capital gains tax on everything except your residential property at the moment, because there is talks of the current prime minister changing it. So you start to see the gist. I'm not ranting. These are facts. And the issue I have is most people don't know about it. Most people don't know about payroll tax. So the more people that you employ, the more tax you pay, the more property you buy, which remember, goes back into the economy, because your property, you're paying taxes, you're paying stamp duties, you're paying all the stuff that contributes to the country, right? But you're paying an extra tax for owning more property. And then when you sell, if you make a profit of anything, doesn't matter how small or big, the government gets a quarter of that profit with no risk. So in effect, the government's hypocritical. They want us to do well, they want us to do stuff, but they tax us every 2 seconds. What do you think's happening to the next generation's aspirational? I can tell you, my daughter is 16, my son is 14, and you know what they're saying to him? I'm not setting up business in Australia. I've seen the tax you pay. I've seen, we grew up, obviously, in the house, you guys talking business, mum and dad. Never complained about paying tax, certainly complained about how it gets spent. But why would the next generation want to go through that? Why do they want to be aspirational? Why do they want to go and build up? There's people listening to this right now that are going, yeah, I'm paying payroll tax, I'm paying land tax, and I'm not making a wage right now, or I'm not, because you pay others first before you pay yourself. Does the government care? No. The ATO then comes out and says, we're going to chase you if you owe money to the ATO. Okay, how do you get money? How do you get blood from a stone, right? How do you get money if you've got none? This is where we've lost our humanity, we've lost our compassion, we've lost our understanding, our ability to be. And what's happening is our middle class is diminishing. So if you put it all into the funnel, and I love to talk about the funnel and what comes out the bottom, we're losing our middle class and we're getting a big divide. So those people, especially the keyboard warriors on social media that whinge and bitch about the rich, you're going to be bitching a lot more because the divide's getting bigger and there's only one person to blame, and that is governments, because they're causing that divide. They're not spending the money wise. They're wasting money in projects. They're not taxing the people that get rid of money out of this country. You know, when many years ago, and there was a Liberal government in play, I can't remember who the prime minister was whether it was Abbott or Morrison or one of them. I think it might have been Morrison. And I can't mention the person who said this. It comes from a predominant financial institution. Was at a private lunch that I was at, 10 people around the table with the prime minister and the treasurer at the time. And he was told, why don't you tax every dollar that leaves the country 2%? That's ridiculous. Why is it ridiculous? Think about it. Tax every dollar that leaves Australia 2%. Now, people go, well, that doesn't affect you. Yeah, it does. I sent $5 million over to New Zealand to build a property. I didn't pay 1 cent in tax yet. Don't get me wrong, I paid my tax on the profit. So I paid my tax, my $5 million was after tax and all the rest of it. But I just took $5 million out of the Australian economy and I sent it to New Zealand's economy, and I didn't get taxed a dollar. And I should have been.
Yeah.
I should have been taxed to take the money out of this country. Right, there's me. It affects me. It doesn't matter. Same rule for everybody. I should have been taxed, but no. There are some simple fixes out there. It's just that's not going to be popular, is it? That's, you come back to your tier ones, yeah. Your Rio Tintos, your BHPs. Can you imagine if the Australian government said, we're going to tax you 2% of every dollar that you take out of this country's economy? There's going to be an uproar, but guess what? They need to be here anyway. So they're not going anywhere. So what we've got is we've got incompetent people running, sitting in positions that they shouldn't be. I'm going to stop ranting in a minute, but I'm going to hand over to you as the expert.
I've enjoyed that rant because it highlights that you've had success, you've developed businesses, you've worked with businesses. You're at the point now of a longer journey of success where you can rattle the cage of a few people and have a voice that gets listened to.
Mm.
And it's a voice that's not heard enough in my view. Calling spades a spade. That's what's been missing. But it's an important rant you have because employers are under this pressure all the time. And trying to communicate to employees about the cost of running a business and the liabilities that are on the table and at stake, the pressure of cost and that sort of thing, they don't really have an understanding and don't care because the cost of living is so high. Every one of my clients has employees asking for more and more and more.
Yeah.
And I understand why. I do get it.
Oh, totally.
But how can we get that message that we're all on the same team here? We're all trying to make this business work.
Yeah.
And the more cost that comes out of it, the less there is for it.
And you know what it is, Tim? The answer is conversations.
Yeah.
What I used to do with, and I still do with my team, is we have constant conversations. So if you're taking home $2,000 a week net, you've cost me double that. You're costing me $4,000. If you're taking home $1,000 net, you're costing me $2,000. And people go, well, how does that work? It's not just the tax, the PAYG. It's 30% on cost on top of that with workers' comp, payroll tax, everything else, right? Insurances, liabilities. It's probably more than 30% now. So what we do is we have that conversation with staff. So staff members on 70 gross, they're actually costing us 100 to 120. And we show that to them and we explain to them that this is the cost. So it's not, okay, you're on 70, you've got to make 70,000 to make your wage. No, this is what we're at. So forget the numbers. It's communication and dialogue, right? Because most employees don't know. It's not that they don't understand. Let's be fair to them.
Yeah.
In my expertise, if they don't understand, you wouldn't have them in your business or you're the idiot for hiring them, right? That you've got good employees in your business, right? You've employed them. They're there. You obviously found some magic in them. You thought they were the right people. And if they weren't, you're the idiot, not them, right? Now, don't treat them like an idiot. Talk to them. Explain to them. We do it all the time. Guys, if this is what you're taking home, this is what you're costing. Now, it's not costing a negative. This is what it costs the business. Now, on the other side, which is so important for people to understand, is higher wages means a higher cost in goods. Higher cost in goods and services means higher wages, means higher cost in services. Cost of goods and services. Higher cost of goods and services means higher wages. If something doesn't break the cycle, do you see where we're going?
Yeah.
You could be earning $300,000 a year and it won't be enough because a loaf of bread will cost $50.
Yep.
They're talking about inflation. We've got natural inflation because everybody's wage has gone up 20%. Everyone's costs have gone up. People go, oh, but my wage has gone up 20%, but I don't have any money. That's because costs have gone up 20%.
Yeah.
The costs have gone up. Your wages have gone up to match it. So now you've got much more money in the economy, which is actually causing inflation again. Now, I'm not an economic expert, but I don't need to be. You want to stop inflation? Stop the non-essential spending of infrastructure with governments. Because when we spend a dollar, they're spending $1,000. When they're spending $100,000. You were privy to one of them. We can't mention brands and names, but you were privy to the same lunch speech I was, where you had one of Australia's biggest in the room that said, you want to curb inflation, tell the government to stop their infrastructure spend that's non-essential, and you're going to put a stop on it. That's one builder that said this. The other scary thing he said is that there's no projects in the woodworks for affordable housing. You think we've got affordable housing problems right now? Good luck. What's going to happen in the next 3 to 5 years? And again, we can't mention brands and names and that, but there's so much going on that people, and you know what the key is, and this is my clincher, we just don't think enough, guys. And if you take that personally, it's your problem. We just don't think enough. We just don't think. And that's why sometimes on some of my posts I put Think Australia, Just Think, or Think People, Just Think. And it's not me being condescending. We need to think. Instead of handouts, hand-ups. Instead of band-aids, fix the problem, right? Let's demand more from all. This is not government bashing on left or right. All politicians need to be held accountable. You're the HR expert, Tim. Would you advise any organization, right, to put a brain surgeon in that comes from being a chef? So if you're out there hiring a brain surgeon, are you going to employ a chef?
Yeah, absolutely not.
Now, people are laughing at me going, are you a dickhead? Well, why don't we have a look at the politicians and what their backgrounds are?
Yeah.
Where do they come from? What's their prior experience? So is the treasurer, does he have a degree in economics? Does he come from a strategic accounting background? Right? No. Yeah. Does the IR Minister for Industrial Relations, do they have an expertise and qualification in what they do? No. So would I have a doctor become a lawyer? Would a lawyer become a doctor without a qualification? The country's hypocritical. But us as people, we're the problem because we accept it. And so we accept it. Don't the standard you walk past is the standard you accept. I said it through COVID. It got picked up by the bloody newspapers. People have used it. The standard we walk past is the standard you accept. And for too long, people are happy to walk past the standard. And I apply that logic to my house with my kids. I apply that logic to my workplace with my people. We care. We adore you. We chose you to join our family. We will look after you. What are you going to do for the business? You're going to care. You're going to enjoy it. You're going to love it. And if you don't, you're free to leave anytime you wish. We want to keep you happy and we want to keep you safe. And in return, you need to do the same thing. You need to keep the business happy and keep the people in the business safe. That's your obligation.
Same, same. You're on the same team. I think this is what is missing in so many of the workplaces I walk into right now. It's that in some cases we've got people in positions that don't really belong in those positions. They're not overly skilled for what they're trying to do, or they've been put in that position because they were last one standing, or that sort of stuff, and no development went into them at all and that sort of thing. We've got other situations where the business is trying to become more sophisticated and getting strategic and that sort of thing, but they're moving away from their people. The people at the top are having great conversations. Sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Goals, sounds amazing.
Oh, yeah.
The people in the front line haven't got a clue what you're talking
no
about.
No idea.
And they're bitten, they're left behind. They haven't had a strategic conversation for 12 months.
Yeah.
And it's just you're not on the same team.
Yeah.
And this is what's happening, I think, on a much larger scale with, you know, in my world, industrial relations lends itself to politics because it's a competition for who controls workplaces in Australia, it really is. But I don't mean to get political or too political.
But it is.
We have to.
Europe laughs at us. The Germans laugh at us and go, the role of government is to say, what can I do to help you? In Australia, the role of government is dictate to business leaders what to do.
Yeah.
Now, think about that as a listener. The role of government in any progressive country is to say, how can I help you? What can I do to help you? The role of government in Australia is to dictate to us. You will do this. You will do that. We will now put this place. You will now do this. Now we have the right to disconnect. All your employees will disconnect at 5 o'clock. You will do this. You will do that. We're dictated to.
The government is the HR department.
That's exactly right. Think about it. And this is not an opinion. Some people will be listening to this going, you boys cracked. I'm not talking opinion. I'm talking facts.
Yeah.
Right. We are dictated to by government. The government sees itself as the highest authority. And this is often in all levels of government. They see themselves as the highest authority and dictate down. No. The role of government to me is to assist, to help, to encourage, right, to keep people safe, to keep things clean. That's the role of government. That's what we're talking about, infrastructure. And look at Queensland government. The safety is terrible. Crime's up. These are numbers. Our health system is lagging with ramping and all the waits and hospital beds. But they're two fundamental jobs of a government. Education. Now, if that government doesn't lose its job come next election, forget about who's going to come in. But if the government doesn't lose its job, would you do that in your business? Would I not sack my CFO if he was stealing money? Would I not sack the CFO if he invested in a project and it went bad and he covered it up or he just pulled the pin and said, oh, well, we'll redirect funds somewhere else? Of course I'm going to sack him or her. They're gone because they haven't done what they're supposed to do. But we don't do that in government. We've got a prime minister who came in and got into government that because he was able to blindside people and say, I'm going to do this and this. I'm going to lower petrol prices. But I've never seen petrol so high in my life. I've just broke the $200 barrier for the first time ever in petrol in my car. There you go. Never has it been more than $200 and never been in the 200 bracket. I just hit that this week, right? And petrol at $2.60 a litre for premium unleaded. Like, we cracked, but it's how he can't control that. Why did he make the promise?
Yeah.
The cost of living was going to come down. Why did we accept it? He's not the problem. We are. Yeah. Now, when somebody says they're going to do something and they don't, get rid of them. That's it's simple. Wake up, Australia.
And on that exact topic, I had a conversation, and I can't even recall who it was I was having this conversation with right now, but the conversation I had was, surely this government can't be voted in the next time that it comes around. But the point they made was, because we were talking again about the IR stuff, right?
Yeah.
All the changes they're making. And they said to me, look, what you've got to understand is that all these changes that you're up in arms about and concerned about benefit employees.
They affect the minority.
They benefit people who work, and the majority of voters are employees. They're not.
But this is what I'm saying. The stuff that is negative only affects a minority.
Yeah.
You know, the majority go, well, it doesn't affect me. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. That's right. And that's what concerns me.
Of course. Well,
at what point do you actually expect that Australians will actually understand what's going on? I'm going to give you an example.
Yeah.
KPMG did a report and they must have been commissioned by the government to do the report. And the report was on the effectiveness of the Fair Work Ombudsman. I don't know if you remember, but last year the CFMEU was trying to get the Fair Work Ombudsman shut down, right? Because, and the reason for that was because this new government came in and they took away the powers of the ABCC, who would control unions and hold them to account. CFMEU being the biggest criminal organisation you can think of, tens of millions of dollars in penalties and so many lawsuits against them for unlawful conduct. That was all done by the ABC. The Labor government came in, took them away and said, no, the Fair Work Ombudsman can take control of it now. They appoint the new Fair Work Ombudsman themselves in a booth.
In a public company, you'd be in jail, right?
That's right. It's corruption, right? Yep. That's what it would be.
Now, you're hearing that, guys? In a public company, you'd be in jail.
Yeah.
So why can that not happen in politics? Just think about it.
They can do it. They can do it. And then getting back to this report, it was submitted to the IR Minister, Tony Burke's office, in December last year. It's just been released just now for public eyes, but it proves what's happening. So the Fair Work Ombudsman has dropped 30% of the cases the ABCC had against...
Conflict of interest. Public company, you'd be in jail.
Yeah, well, you would be, exactly. So, but not only that, they also haven't pursued any matter against the CFMEU ever since they took over the power. And this is, like I said, it's the most active criminal organisation in terms of...
And why aren't people talking about it?
Exactly. It's this report from KPMG was given to the IR minister.
Yeah, and who's KPMG's biggest customer?
The government.
So is KPMG going to work against the government?
Well, you wouldn't think so, would you?
Sorry, but again, what are we talking about? The system's broken. Yes. The system, and it's going to continue to be broken. And so coming back to your point before, these changes in minority, we've got to start having the dialogue's got to change, and it's got to be, okay, if every private business shuts down in Australia, who's going to employ everybody?
Yeah.
And what's going to happen? The government. Oh, that's great. So who's going to pay the government? Because they collect the money from business owners, right? They collect taxpayers' money. So who's going to pay the government so that they can pay you?
Yeah.
So that's the why of why it matters, is because if we don't have small, medium, large businesses out there because it's too hard, then you don't have a job. You better hope to God the government's got money coming from somewhere.
Absolutely.
To pay you.
And this is the thing. People don't understand just how large the portion of employers that the people that give you the jobs in this country, 99% of them, and I think even more, 99.8% of them, I think is the actual number, employers who have less than 200 staff.
Yeah, right? There's 470,000 small business in Queensland, right? So if you take the Queensland alone, which is 19 employees or below, if you take out the government, they're the biggest employer of people.
Yeah, that portion is a big, that's right. And that is middle Australia. That's who you're referring to before. Correct. You've got to have a strong middle Australia. And
that's right.
Because a strong middle Australia will pull you out of the shit when the government and the tier ones fuck it up.
Yep.
They're the ones who pull you up and get you out of it.
Yeah.
Think back to the GFC. Think back to this COVID shit. If you've got a strong middle Australia, you can handle them, whether that's you can do it better than most who don't. And not to get too much on the higher horse, at some point, Australians have to fucking wake up and realise the corruption that's happening in government. And why they do it is to disperse the money around to favour unions and this sort of thing. That's what's happening in Australia right now. And it's only going to impact your employability in Australia. You're going to lose jobs and opportunities.
And if you look at kick the bucket down the road, because I like to look at the long vision, is what I said before. You talk to a teenager now and say, have you got any aspiration to own your own business? 20 years ago, 30 years ago, everyone wanted to own their own business.
Yeah.
Shit, even 10, 15 years ago, everyone wanted to own their own business. Talk to people now. They don't want
it. Why would you when in Queensland alone, you go into a two-day course to be a traffic controller, you're getting $200,000 a year.
Correct.
And that's what the government's forced that. They've forced your business to go into a...
Yeah, the school teacher gets what, 120?
If you're a very senior experienced teacher, for sure. Yeah.
Didn't he shoot himself in the foot there, the good old premier smart man that he is, Mr. Giggles? He lifted the construction workers and did the deals with the CFMEU and all of that. And he forgot about the frontline staff. He forgot about the teachers. He forgot about the people that actually are the backbone of this bloody state. Your police, your fire, your ambulance. You forgot about the nurses. You forgot about your teachers who are teaching the kids, the next generation, the kids that we brought up. He forgot all about it. And then what did he do? And I'm being very refrained from using bad words. He then goes on TV and laughs and says, I might have made a mistake.
Yeah. And all those groups of workers you mentioned just then, if you listen to this podcast, you might think I'm anti-union. I'm not. I'm anti-fucking asshole. That's what I am, right?
But the concept of a union back in the day was good. What was it for? Safe and happy. A union to me, the ideology of a union is good. But to me, if you've got a union, you don't need an HR person. because the union's job, you shouldn't, right? Because the union's job is to keep people safe and happy. Yeah. And I hope union people are listening, because if your intentions are right, you're going to go, yeah, shit, this guy's right. The job of a union is to keep people safe and happy. The job of a union is not to dictate to government on where money gets thrown around and pulls the strings and all this sort of stuff. That's corruption, right? The job of a union is to keep people safe and happy, keep them safe in their jobs, especially construction. That was where they got their biggest gaining ground, because construction was pretty a nightmare many years ago. Yeah. The working hours, the safety issues, all of that. So the concept of a union is excellent, right? But the execution now is probably borderline, if not criminal in some cases, right?
Yeah, and like I said before, I'm not lying when I say that this unlawful conduct of a particular union. Right? It's facts, yeah.
If you're doing that stuff in a public company, you'd be fired or you'd be in jail.
You would be. Right? And well, the government wouldn't even let you. If you got as many workplace regulation fines and bans and penalties as this one employer group gets, the government would not let you operate a business ever again. They wouldn't let you go near people. It is favoritism and that sort of thing. But going back to what you're saying before, the people you mentioned before, police officers, teachers, nurses, in my view, they're the ones who need a union, because they've got as you can see, a authoritarian government that calls the shots and doesn't give a shit.
They
about
do need a union. Keep them safe and happy.
Yeah, that's right.
You got teachers getting beaten up by 7-year-old kids. Yeah. Are you for real? This is where the union does need to step in and go, no. That we're not having our teachers exposed to that. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. That's where the union stuff has to come to. Again, intention, but the execution has to meet the intention. And that's what's not happening. And I'm sure you'd agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And look, to change speed a little bit, let me ask you a question about this.
We're going to talk about some positive stuff.
Yeah, mate. Maybe. Depends on your response. Depends on what your thoughts are. Now, I'm guilty of this. I'm guilty of this. And because there's so much in this space to talk about, but the challenges and negatives of being an employer and regulations, it's just the conversation's endless, right?
Mm.
Do you like being an employer? And what are the good things from a personal perspective that if you do like being an employer, what are the good things you've taken away in your own life from being an employer? What's good about it?
I love being an employer. Absolutely love it, and I still do, even though it's got more challenges now because of changes from government. But I love being an employer because you are helping build and shape lives, right? Especially my ethos always has been to all of person comes to work, personal, professional, family. We get our team members and we encourage, because we don't dictate to them, we encourage them to set personal goals, professional goals, and family goals. We don't look at their goals, it's their business, but we do the training and the coaching and the leading around all of person comes to work. Don't just have professional goals, make sure you have goals and aspirations for your personal self. Do you want to learn a new language, lose weight? What is it? Go on a silent retreat, whatever it is. Have family goals. Do you want to take the family away? Do you want to learn dancing lessons? Whatever it is, and have professional goals. So we take a vested interest in all of our people. We tell them that if this is not right for you and you don't want to be here, that's fine. I've had people give me 12 months notice, 9 months notice, 6 months notice. To me, one of the warning signs is anyone that just gives their general notice. If it's 2 weeks, 4 weeks, and that's all they give, to me, that says a lot about the culture in your business, because we encourage our people to have open conversations. If you want to move on, not a problem. We had one move on not recently, gave us 10 weeks notice and says, I'm letting you know that continues. We had somebody else say, look, I'm going to be looking for a new job. No problems. Give us enough notice that you can stay here till the day you need to. Thanks for letting us know. Because I love being an employer. Why? I love being an employer because we're contributing something greater. We're contributing to families. You're seeing people grow up. You're seeing families grow up. You're seeing kids grow up. I've helped people buy their first property. I've seen them get their license. I've seen people that were scrubbing floors in wholesale now, fast forward 20 and 15, 16 years later, he's my state manager. We're seeing that sort of stuff. I love all that. It has gotten harder.
Yep.
But I never take it out, and there's a message in that, I never take it out on the employee. To me, the employee is like having the world's best bait. If you want to go fishing and you've got the world's best bait, you're going to catch the fish like there's no tomorrow. And people in your business are your best bait. They are the best asset you have to ensure that you get the right and the best customers. And yes, on the flip side, government does make it harder. Government does put it in. And the most pressing thing for me most recently was we had an amazing employee in our business that was an international student. And long story short, the laws meant she had to quit, and because she can't survive 24 hours a week. And so we lost a good person because of that law change. And Australia lost a good person because she went back home. because she just couldn't survive on 24 hours. And she was, and for the right reason, she was morally the right spot. She wouldn't go under the table and accept cash and stuff like that from other people. She was offered it from other people, not from us. And she said no and left the country. And Australia not only lost an amazing worker, but they lost an amazing student, and international students pay a lot of money to be here. That's the downside of being an owner. The what have I seen changes, Tim? I have to tell you, and some people blame COVID. I think it's not, I don't blame COVID as such. COVID was the trigger point. Governments is who I blame. We're now seeing people, because I've got people that used to work for me to Bella and that now work for me at the Coffee Commune, and they're still brilliant, but I've seen a disconnect.
Yeah.
And what I mean by disconnect, they still do an amazing job. So we now manage and lead, so now we manage tasks and lead the people in line with productivity. And that's probably a tip for the listeners.
Yeah.
Because I was starting to get the shits, people waltzing in at 9 and leaving at 5 until went, this is not going to change, because I never had that. 22 years of running a business, I had people that were supposed to start at 9. They were there at 8 o'clock. I came in at 4 in the morning because they wanted to get shit done and leave earlier because we never monitored their hours. But then, now I've got people come in at 9 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, they go have their smoker. At 12 o'clock, they have their lunch. At 3 o'clock, they have their smoker. At 5 o'clock, they leave. And then they go, I don't have enough time to do the work. And I go, whoa, I'm not managing time. I'm going to manage you to productivity.
Yeah.
And so I have seen a change. So I still haven't changed caring for my people. I haven't changed loving being an employer and seeing people grow. But as I said, that's a tangible experience, two tangible experiences of how the government's made it harder. Because I've had to change my mindset. I've had to make a mind shift to go, that was yesterday. People would put in the extra hours, they would do it. And extra hours, I don't mean that we're paying them less and getting more out of it. No, that sometimes that extra hours of hanging around, having a coffee with the team, hey, let me going into a different department saying, can I help you because you need some help? Whereas now we're seeing this, it's just like the government's coming with this right disconnect, but people started disconnecting post-COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's made it harder for employers. And I'm sure there's a lot of people listening going, yeah, okay. But you know what? You can't get shitty with that. Trust me, I went there and then I went, no, hang on. And no, I've got to change my mindset. I've got to change it. I've got to shift. So my word moving forward has been productivity. I'm not going to monitor your hours and I'm not going to get upset if you come in and leave early. You got to be productive. So if you like to come in at 9, you want to do your smoko 3 times and your bloody lunch and this and that, no problem. But you better work at double the speed in the meantime to get shit done that you need to, because we need to be productive. If you're not productive, I can't pay you. If I can't pay you, I've got to let go of you. And I don't want to let go of anybody.
Yeah, that's it. There's a couple of things on that, if you indulge me for a second.
Yeah.
Two things that are around productivity. One of the conversations I had recently with a pretty large business, actually more than one, probably 3 or 4 of our clients, was around asking questions around flexible working arrangements and flexible hours and this sort of thing. And they're sending me emails and asking me my thoughts on this and that. And all they're sending me is start time, finish time, this day, that day. I'm like, guys, your mind's on the wrong thing. If you want to work, if you want to have flexible working arrangements, get real and get the productivity and then the outcomes right.
Perfect.
Talk about the outcomes. Don't worry about the hours. If they want to work flexibly, let them work flexibly. Tell them what you need from them as in terms of an outcome and what you need produced, and let them give that to you the way they see that they can give it to you. And not every position you can do that with, right?
Correct.
But that's a good way to look at. It's an opportunity to get more out of your people with flexible work.
But show them good cause, right?
Exactly, yeah. And the other thing we spoke about before with clients that we've got and every business facing employees asking for more money, needing more, wanting more. There's an opportunity right there as well where we can now redesign. You want more money? It's not about just getting 10, 20 grand more for doing the same job you've been doing. All right, let's...
I've been having those conversations for 22 years.
Yeah.
And you know my motto? The more money you make the company, the more money you get paid. So at DeBella, I added one of my BDMs. Base was on $150,000, which is a lot of money. My best was on $750,000
a year.
And they go, you paid him that much? How much money did he make the business?
Yeah.
We had a cultural, it's a cultural thing. The more money, and we've got it now. The more money you make the business, the more money you get paid. So we've got people now that do their day-to-day job Monday to Friday. And then we've got one gentleman who comes in on Friday to run a couple of hours training session, makes $400 in a couple of hours because he's upskilled himself to be able to deliver professional training, which obviously gets more money because we share any of the additional training done on a Saturday, he gets 50% of the revenue. Yeah. And we did that to create an opportunity. We had another staff member who built his own line of canned coffee drinks. We gave him that opportunity. We've got another staff member who's doing his printed coffee bags as a side business, and he does that after hours. So he's running his own small business as well as he's actually a GM getting paid really good money. That's a culture that people should have. So I love what you just said. Yep. And it's an ethos I've had for 22 years. The more money you make the business, the more money you get paid. And for so many years, everyone's had this taboo thing. You can't ask people what they get paid. You can't, it's not this, it's not that. Be transparent. Tell people how much money you make. Tell them if you're breaking even. Tell them if you're making a loss. Mate, the key to business is emotional engagement. You want the best out of your people, you need to make them emotionally engaged. The best way to emotionally engage is make them safe and make them happy. Communicate with them. Tell them what's going on in the business. Right. Now, don't get me wrong. Some people are going to take that the wrong way. Now, we told one of our staff the other day that we just got to break even or just under. He's like, oh, we're doing really bad. Are we going to close the doors? No. Like, sometimes they can take the information the wrong way.
Yeah.
But it's okay. They still showed care and compassion, right? No, we're not closing the doors. It's past. We've projected this to up to year four. We won't make any money. But we're having the conversation. We're having the open dialogue with our teams, telling them where the financial position of the organization is, right? And it comes back to that, keeping them safe, keeping them happy, keeping them part of the journey. And if you want to earn more, what are you going to do to make the business more? Not me personally. The business.
Yeah.
So the business pays you. I don't personally pay you. The business does. So what are you going to put in if you want to take more out? Have those conversations with your people. And it doesn't matter what size the business is. Have those conversations with your people. And you'll see that you'll actually get emotional engagement with people. You'll say, what's a silver bullet with people? You've been able to build great teams and they stay with you for a long time. Hire the right people. How do you do that? You hire when you don't need them. Before you even hire, design the seats of the bus, the whole Jim Collins. What are the seats of your organization? What do you need? What are the functions of the role? What are the values of the role? What does it look like? What does the avatar of that person look like to go into that role? Design it. Go about employing when you don't need if you can. Now, some people can't afford to do that. That's fine. But have the seat designed when you don't need it. Have the seat designed. Hire if possible when you don't need them, and then hire very slowly. I use my teams to hire their teams. And then I get the final tick off from a cultural aspect. But before they get to me, it's all about the teams hired them, because they already jump in ready to hit the ground running because they've met the team. The team knows about them. They know about the team, because if they're not working directly with me, and it was a strategy I used as I grew the company and became one more removed. That's the strategy I put in place, is every time I became one more removed, the next person would step in to do the hiring with the closest people to them. What do you end up getting closer, not always, to a better culture, because they're building the culture, not me. So any leader out there that's dictating culture, you're a fool. The culture is bought by the people. So when they go, oh, the culture in this organization is no good, I turn around and go, and touch wood, it hasn't happened, but I turn around and I've worked with organizations where it has, turn around and go, the people, okay, so what are you doing to make it better?
You're the culture.
What do you mean? what are you doing to make it better? If you don't like the culture of the organization, what are you doing? Why are you not being part of the change you want to see? What are you contributing to the poor culture? Because to me, it's not the leaders. If I walk into a place and the culture's on the wall, I often rip it down and go, why is it on your wall? It shouldn't have to be on your wall.
Yeah.
Your customer.
Should be the fabric of
it. Well, when someone comes to visit me, I say to them, how was your experience when you walked in the door? Oh, your team is so attentive. Oh, your team is so happy. Oh, your team rushed to get me a coffee. There's my culture.
Yeah.
So I've got people that are present. I've got people that got the right attitude.
Yeah, I've experienced that. I've been in the coffee community a few times now, and that is there to meet you or anything. Mm. So that wasn't something that I'm putting on, because this person's here to make me feel better.
Yeah.
Something on here. They had no idea.
Mm.
And every time it's the same level of service.
We've got an amazing team, right? But how do we train them? This is my vision. These are the parameters. What do you need from me to achieve it?
Yep.
You see, it's the template. This is where the vision, this is what I want, these are the parameters, what do you need from me to achieve this? So I meet with them every quarter. We met not even a month ago, a couple of weeks ago, and I did the same thing. We had a lot of new staff join us and said that this is my expectation. This is what great customer service looks like to me. What does it look like to you? When you're a customer somewhere else, what do you hate? I hate waiting. I hate when people don't look at you. I hate being called mate. Perfect. Do the opposite. That's how easy it is. Do the opposite. You know what good, you're on board because you know what bad customer service looks like. Do the opposite. Care about people. Don't be fake. Be authentic. Some people are going to be warmer than others. Some, I'm shit with names. Right. So I said to people, look, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name. I do remember your face, but I don't remember your name because that's not my forte.
Yeah.
I got one of our girls. She's a gun. You go in there once, tell her your name, your coffee, and she'll remember it. That's her strength. That's her superpower. She's amazing. Right. Now, you got to nurture your good people, and if your people aren't good, you got to teach them and lead them. You don't manage people. You manage things. The moment you need to manage somebody is the moment maybe they need to go.
Yeah.
You need to get better at what you do. And people forget what you say, mate. They remember how you make them feel. And, Tim, that's something that people used to say to me, what's a silver bullet? What's a secret sauce? And I say, I can tell you many, but if I had to pick one, emotional engagement. Yeah. People who win, and winning is different things to different people, but winning is all about emotional engagement. The more emotionally engaged you are on a positive level, then the better the outcome. And teachers are a great example. If little Johnny's a shitbag in school and he writes an essay and little Miss Beautiful is lovely or Mr. Beautiful is lovely and it's very subjective writing an essay, who do you think is going to get the better marks? Where would your money be going?
Yeah.
Certainly not on little ratbag Johnny. It's just this is – people say, oh, that's not true. Probably shouldn't be, but it is.
It's reality. It's how people are. You know, the first book, you didn't write this book, but it was Entrepreneurial Intelligence.
Yeah, Alan Bonsall, yeah.
Alan, yeah. And it was based on your
story,
your journey, your beliefs and your values and that sort of thing. And I read that back in 2012 or 2011, whatever it was, and still got it today and still look at it back then because there's a little tool in there. And I remember what I took away from that book was it's all about a customer. What's in it for me?
What's in it for me, yeah.
It's all about that. And I took that sort of theory and that concept and started my first ever business, which was about teaching executives how to communicate with potential employers for really outstanding opportunities they were trying to get. Stop talking about yourself and start talking about what they're
correct. Going to do. How am I going to solve your problem?
Yeah. And that was a massive light globe for me. And
thanks for sharing that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's then gone into two or three iterations of the business to land where I am today. And that's still true for you today every time that I hear you talk. And your next book's the 17 Rules of
17 Rules of Game Changer Thinking.
Yeah, I recommend read that as well, and I'm most of the way through that one now. It's just simplicity and fundamentals and getting it right.
But things are simple, right?
Yeah.
Even in your world, Tim.
Yeah.
That's what I love about how you go about your way, right? You're actually trying to demystify the bullshit that they're creating up here for the everyday person. And that's why I've always said I love what you do because of that. And obviously I know a lot about it because I chair the advisory board that you're on to help you accelerate your potential. I love what you do because you're doing the same thing. You're going, let me deal with this garbage here. I will demystify it and give it to you here so that you're safe and that you can provide a safe and fun environment for your team. And you play more in the safe space than the fun, but you can do both in terms of what your services do.
Yeah.
You're also at the same time going, I'm going to push back on these guys because I can see how it affects you. And that to me explains exactly what you do well. And the HR Cartel podcast is a great example of that, right? Because I've been following it now for a while, is that you're actually taking what's happening here, demystifying it so people can understand it, but then you're also using it as an opportunity to push back and go, hey, if we keep down this track, something's got to give. And that's something that listeners need to think about. If we just keep doing the same old, then no one stands up. What do you think's going to happen? Like really, put the 3-year, 5-year stance on. If somebody said 10 years ago, that a virus was going to shut down the whole world and you wouldn't be able to leave your house, everyone's going, are you lost the plot?
Yeah.
Are you missing a few chromosomes?
You're out of your mind.
Yeah. Like you're crazy, right? It happened. Now, if that can happen, anything can happen. I see a world in 5 to 10 years, right? I see in a country 5 to 10 years with no middle class if we don't start taking action, right? And if you want to look at countries that don't have a middle class, even though they're extreme, India doesn't have a middle class, ultra, ultra rich, poor. I've been to India over 20 times. I've got business there. I'm not talking opinions. China, communist, dictatorship. Now, they've got an okay middle class because the government, especially the current government, is pretty progressive, right? So they've got the thing, but many years ago, they didn't have a strong middle class. Why? Because dictatorship. That's the way they operate in their country. And I'm not bagging any of these countries. I'm saying use them as an example.
Yeah.
Australia, my parents migrated here in the 60s along with hundreds and hundreds of thousands of other migrants from all over the world because they wanted to build an amazing middle class. And my parents were only ever middle class. They only ever owned one property. They earned $450 a week and they brought up a whole family, two boys and a girl. That's what they did, $450 a week, no brand new cars, no holidays. They had their house paid off within 10 years of arriving into Australia. Dad's net to this date, never been overseas, 60 or whatever it is now, 60 odd years later, never been back to Australia, never owned a brand new car until I bought him his brand new car as a present and a thank you. Like they didn't, what, one TV, no air conditioning in the house, not because it wasn't, not only because it was expensive, but because expensive to run. There was things you just didn't do. We didn't eat out a lot. Back then, I'll never forget as a young kid, Pizza Hut once a month was a luxury. And then the local Italian pizzeria opened, so that was became the place once a month. Yeah, this is how I grew up. I grew up with values. I grew up conservative, and I still am conservative, right? People go, what do you mean conservative? You drive Ferrari, you drive that. It's all relative.
Yeah.
You know, I've also paid over $33 million in tax. I also donate close to $100,000 a year. Different charities and stuff. It's all relative, right? And that's not, hey, showboating, look at me. My dad still donates probably $1,000 a year. There you go.
Yeah.
So it's all relative.
You can't cherry pick one element about it.
No, but it doesn't matter. I'm saying it's all relative, right? My dad is on a pension. He donates $1,000 a year roughly to Heart Foundation and diabetes. He picks a couple and he does it. It's all relative. You got more, you do more. You got less, you do less. More people need to learn that and they wouldn't be in financial trouble. And the government needs to learn that and they wouldn't cause financial hardship. But it's a simple model, right? The government's simple. If we make a dollar, spend 90 cents. No, but the government makes a dollar, spends $1.20 because they're trying to get your vote. It's not because they're a bunch of potatoes, even though they are a lot of times. The system's broken.
Yeah.
There's no accountability.
It allows it.
You know, you know what the cycle is? I tell a whole heap of bullshit. I get voted in. I then renege on my bullshit for the first year or two. Then I kickstart into mode, and then the cash splash comes, and then I'm voted back in because people have got short memories. Does that sound familiar to everyone? Think about it. And now there's going to be some people that don't agree with me. I don't care. At least I'm being part of the change I want to see, and that's not me being condescending, right? That is factual what happens. Look at the cycle. Albanese's gotten in, made a whole heap of promises, got in. He hasn't delivered on most of them, right? Next year he'll start needing to step up, and then the cash splash will come just before the election, hoping that you've forgotten about it all, and away it goes. We're seeing it now with the Queensland government. Guys, let's be smarter than that. Don't let people insult our intelligence. And it's not left or right and Liberal and Labor and Greens and this and bullshit. Be strategic, be proactive, be informed, research, ask questions. These are not opinions. Green energy, right? Of course I'd love an environment of green. Of course. I'm the first one. Hey, I'm a wog. I tell my kids, turn off the freaking air conditioner when you're not using it. Turn off the TV when you're not using it. Turn off the lights. It's not good for the environment, right? All this sort of stuff. We've got solar at work. We've got solar at home. I tell my kids, don't sit in the shower for bloody 20 minutes. Of course we're conscious about the environment, right? We recycle rubbish. We do all that sort of stuff, right? But right now the government's trying to do that to win votes, especially in Queensland. Now, at what cost? Think about this. At what cost? Green energy costs money. And the people right now don't have that money to do it.
Yeah.
But so the government comes out today and says, we're going to give everyone $1,000. Every household gets $1,000. There's the cash splash. Why? Election in October. They caused the problem. A week ago, they were out there talking about how there's new wind turbines and new this and new that and new this. Yeah, they do contribute to a greener environment. I agree, not taking it away. But it's more expensive energy. Can you afford to pay more for your electricity? So I'd say green is good, but at what cost? Or is now the right time? Now, I hope I've explained that in a way where it resonates, because swap out green and electricity and plug in a different issue. The issue might be good. The intention might be good. And I talk a lot about this, as you've heard. Your intention can be fantastic, but if your execution is shit, it can be diabolical.
Yeah.
And this is where we're going with energy at the moment. The intention is good, but the execution is going to cause a lot of hurt. If you think you're hurting right now with an electricity bill, you won't see what happens in 3 years' time.
This cash splash you're talking about, if you're in Queensland, you might know about it. If not, you may not. But it's all it's doing is kicking the can down the road for people who
Band-aid. Pay
their bills in another year.
Band-aid.
That's all it's doing.
Yep.
I'm respectful and conscious of your time. So if we've been going for about an hour and 20, so if you don't mind.
You might want to cut it down to two segments or something. I don't know. I'm happy for you to do that. Or you can play it all as one. It's you're the show. You're the host. You're the owner.
But there is one thing that I want to ask you, and it bleeds in well to what we're just talking about. But you're all about being better today than you were yesterday and being the best you can be and all that sort of stuff. And this is a bit more of a personal question, but from my internal dialogue is horrible. Never believe I'm doing enough and that sort of thing. But then if you stop after a while and look back, you actually made a shit ton of progress.
Yeah.
You've done a lot. You've achieved a lot. And that doesn't curtail the negative internal thought, but you're still getting better every day. You still mm-hmm. are. But as an advocate for that type of approach to life yourself, and it's all your podcasts that you've done, these are the sort of ongoing theme that you've already always got. So I'm keen to ask you, do you think that negative talk is actually somewhat of a strength to have? And somewhat, it's not all that bad.
Yeah, look, it'd take an hour to answer that. But in short, negative talk is good, but you've got to channel it in the right direction, just like fear. People go, you get up and you publicly speak and you have no fear. I always have fear. I just don't tremble. The more fear I have, the better I perform, because I channel that fear. So it's not the fear that's bad, it's what I do with the fear. The negative talk is not bad. Am I enough? Am I doing enough? And I'll give you an interesting concept in a minute, but it's how you channel that, right? Now, isn't this funny? Madonna King, who I love her writing, and she does a lot around kids, right? Girls, because I've read all her books around kids, girls are constantly asking, am I loved? And if I look at my daughter, she's, Papa, I love you, Papa. And she loves it when I tell her I love her, or when I'm showing her that I care, or I go and give her a hug, or she'll arrive and give me a hug, right? Girls are often, most are about, am I loved? Boys, am I enough? Now, if you take that away into the work scenario for ourselves and our people, it's exactly the same. Mm. Most girls are going to be, am I loved? Now, in a work environment, you can't go up to a girl and hug her and kiss her, you'll get arrested, right? But you'll show love in different ways. Care, empathy, do they need support? What do they need? That means celebrating good things as well. Mm. But girls come from a place of, am I loved? Boys come from a place of, am I enough? Which also explains the negativity, why girls can be more emotional because of love, and guys are egotistical because they're beating their chest. So what I do is I make sure that I have that positive talk to myself. Anytime I get the 60 or 70,000 thoughts a day, which people do, that's what we have, 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day, and any of those thoughts are negative, I revert to pen and paper, right? In a lot of the case, notes on my phone. So I write thoughts and feelings. How am I feeling? What am I thinking? I get it out of my head and I put it on paper and I'm channeling it. So it's not bad because I'm channeling it. And then I'll go back to it and go, why did I feel like that? How did I feel like that? So I'm constantly growing. And the short answer is growth mindset versus fixed mindset. So negative talk is not bad, right? But you'll find that you get less negative talk if you follow this model. Learn, grow, pause, reflect, learn, grow, pause, reflect. So it's, and I'm not being a smart ass because I learned that because I never used to do it. And then I look behind me and go, where the fuck is everybody? Hang on, I'm feeling alone here. What the fuck? What's going on? What's happening? Yeah. I didn't celebrate the wins. I didn't pause. I didn't stop, look back and reflect. And it was causing all sorts of stuff, health issues. It was causing, I was overweight. It was causing high blood pressure. It was causing issues with my wife because I thought everyone was a transaction. It caused all sorts of stuff. The biggest shift change for me in my journey has been to go learn, go pause, reflect. What did I do? What do I need to do better? Go learn and go again. Mm-hmm. And so it's that toning it down. We get caught up in cliches to these people. Part of the problem in the world today with the millennials is because everyone says you can have it all. But you can't fucking have it all. Not everyone gets a medal. Not everyone gets a fucking ribbon. I don't make a profit every year, every month. It's not possible. It doesn't happen. So, no, you can't have it all. So let's get out of this mindset and build a false economy. Let's be realistic, right? That's why we've got problems with millennials. The parenting is atrocious because, Johnny, you can have everything. Oh, little Susie, you can be anything you want to be. No, she can't. He can't. There's certain things you can't. It's like this gender neutral, and here we go. We'll open up in other words. You're a penis, or you got a vagina. Now, if you choose to change that, your prerogative. You know what I say? People go, what would your solution be on a form? What did you have at time of birth? And people go, hang on, that's funny, but hang on, that's fucking serious.
You can answer that.
You can answer that.
Yeah.
Without discriminating.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be discriminating anyway. You only got a penis or a vagina. Now, if you change from a penis to a vagina, it's your prerogative. I don't give a shit. It doesn't worry me. But you're one or the other. Don't tell me I'm non-binary. Get stuffed. Yeah. Like, you're one or you're the other, right? So I'll go one step and go, okay, what were you when you were born? What were you? Because you once said that defines me. What was your genitalia at time of birth, right? It's a more, but it's still, there's still an answer to it, right? Now, it's not just to hone in on that. We've lost our minds. We've lost our marbles. Because at the end of the day, if it doesn't matter if you're male or female, don't have it on the form. But tell me it doesn't matter on a license when you're trying, when it's an ID. It doesn't matter on a passport. Of course it matters. You can't have non-binary on a passport or they're legal documentations, right?
Yeah.
But do you need to have it on a certain form? No, then don't put it there. Where's the common sense gone? You know what it is? We let the minority dictate. So we let the stupid people get more vocal because the smart people live in fear. Are you for real? Come on, man. That's not contributing to a society. And if you haven't worked it out or not, what do I do with the negative talk? I find channels to get it out. Right. I get my channels to get it out in the appropriate audience where I can. Sometimes it might not be appropriate. But, hey, we're all going to go through it. So, in short, use channel. It's how you channel it. It's not fear that's the problem. It's what you do with it. It's not negative talk. It's what you do with it. And the key is remember that personal, professional, family makes up your life. Don't just set professional goals that you want to achieve personally. You want to achieve professionally because people say to me, but you're such a raving success. I said, back then I thought I was. I look back now and go, I was fucking hopeless. I was only successful in business. I traveled 3 weeks a month. I lived out of a suitcase, didn't see my kids and family for 3 weeks a month, and I was 70 kilos overweight. I wasn't a success. Right? I was professionally successful, but I was not a complete success. I can say I'm on that journey to success now. I train, I've lost my weight, I maintain my weight, I take all school holidays off, and I'm building a business. So I'm more successful now when I haven't even hit break even versus when I was making millions of dollars because that's what matters to me. And that's the clincher. What comes out of the filter? What matters to you? What matters to you individually, family, and professionally? Work that out, document it, and then start working on what ingredients you need to put in the filter, in the funnel, to spit that out. Because we're not here for a long time and I haven't rocked up to a funeral yet where somebody's Lamborghini, Ferrari, gold stash, wine collection, Rolexes, whatever it is that the possessions they think that matter, air tickets to all their holidays or whatever they like to showboat about. I haven't rocked up to a funeral where all that stuff's on show. I've rocked up to funerals where someone stands up and says, I remember a time we went down to the pub and this is what happened, or we went overseas and this is what happened, or we had a surprise dinner, or the person fell over and tripped but didn't drop their beer. They talk about moments. They talk about memories. And that's my legacy. That's what I want to build is I often say life's measured in moments. When I'm not here anymore, what are people going to say about me? They're not going to say I'm the nicest, sweetest. You're not going to say everybody loved him. Otherwise, they're full of shit. If anyone says that at my funeral, you've got the wrong person talking at my funeral. Right? They're not going to say that. They're going to say he's authentic. He's honest. He got a buzz out of helping people. He was humble. He was respectful to his parents of who brought him up and the environment. He celebrated the wins. He wanted the best for others to celebrate. He wanted to see others succeed, not drag them down. That's me. And people go, shit, you're sure of yourself? Yeah, I am. I should be, and so should you. We should all know what we want to stand for because that's what I want to stand for. That's what I want people to say about me. They're not going to say I was the nicest person in the world. They're not going to say that I didn't upset them because I have upset plenty of people, just like they've upset me. Right. No, for whatever reason, it happens. You can't always get it right and you won't.
No.
So that's the sort of stuff that I think. And if governments, if unions, if people, workers, employees, if we got rid of all of the titles, all of the classifications, all of that, at the end of the day, everybody is a human. And where's the humanity gone? Because that's true humanity. And I proved it at COVID when I said, I will not be discriminating people based on whether they're vaccinated or not. And I got labeled an anti-vax. And what the morons didn't actually understand, and yes, if you're one of them, you're a moron too. I'm actually vaccinated. And the only reason I got vaccinated was I couldn't see my niece get married, who I used to change her nappies, if I didn't get vaccinated. But I didn't vaccinate my kids because I wouldn't take the risk on them. But I got vaccinated because I'd rather take the risk on me and see my niece get married. And so while everyone was being, you know, not everyone, 5% of the people saying you're an anti-vax, that's the problem in the world. It's the 5% versus the 95% who's to this day come up to me and say, thank you for standing up. Thank you for being so vocal. And I just say, I don't need to be thanked. To me, it was common decency. My parents grew up with discrimination. Wog, wog, wog. Australia fought so hard to get rid of discrimination. We said sorry to the Aboriginals. We've done all this sort of stuff that's been progressive. And then in one swoop, they want us to start discriminating at the door. No. If you're sick, you stay home. If you're not sick and we give you a RAT test, you're negative, you're welcome to come. isn't that a much more logical way to do things? Yet what happened with the labels? 95% were amazing. 5% want to call me Andy Vaxxer and I hope he goes broken. You know what? And if you're one of these, really pull your head in. Some people can be really vile because sometimes I go back and read some of the comments. I hope he goes broke. I hope his kids hate him when they grow up. Really? Are you for real? Now, and then sickness. We go, yeah, that's but then sickness. On the other side we go, oh, anti-bullying. Didn't I mention this before? We can be a country of complete hypocrisy sometimes.
Yeah.
It all starts with us as individuals. Gandhi is far wiser than I'll ever be. Be part of the change you want to see. And I wouldn't stoop to people's level that make those comments because I want to be part of the change I want to see. And that's why I go above and beyond to help people where I can. Because I want to be part of that change, regardless of if somebody's got something negative. And there'll be people listening to this going, oh, full of shit. It's not problems. Switch it off.
Yeah.
Go and have another beer.
Exactly.
Chill out and go live in your bar land in a way. Because you know what the alternative is? I could be sitting at home doing nothing. I need to work. I choose to work. I don't need to help. I choose to help. And I love helping. It's part of my DNA. It's the way I was brought up by my family. And that's what I want to do. And that's and more importantly, I want to be a role model for my kids and do the same thing. And to this date, touch wood, 16 and 14, they're beautiful kids because they're good with people that they want to help. My son still taps me. He's been doing it since he was bloody 2-3 years old. At 14, he still does it. Taps me when he sees a tip jar or a donation jar or someone busking, he'll tap me and he'll go, as in, put the money in the jar, Dad, right? Because that's the way they've been brought up. Help. You can help somebody, help them. Somebody's there, go buy a coffee and give it to them. The big issue guy, we give him $10 a month, but we don't take the magazine. I don't need it. I don't read it. I actually don't enjoy it, but I love the concept. I love the concept of the big issue. So every month we give the gentleman the $10 for the magazine. We don't take the magazine. We do. Everyone does a little bit. It goes far. It's not about splashing cash. You don't have money, donate time. Smile at somebody. Do something, right, that's going to put and that's what I mean by the humanity. And where does it all tie in, Tim? That's what human resource management actually should be. It should be business as usual. It should be caring for people as usual, not governments dictating to somebody that you need to now do this and do that. Because if that's the case, then we shouldn't be leaders. We shouldn't own businesses if we're not going to care for people. Safe and fun and everything else that goes with it.
Beautiful. And on that note, we might wrap it up. Thanks
mate. I've talked your ear off. I apologize. But
no, it's all good things. It's another 3 hours we could sit down and go through easily, I think. But
no, well, thanks for having me on the show. And I commend you and love you what you've done and continue to do. And you've got a voice. There's not many people, if any, out there doing what you do proactively and brave with talking about union stuff and governments. But if you're certainly living up to those words, be part of the change you want to see and keep doing that. Keep demystifying, pushing back, but helping small business and small, medium business, because you've got some bigger clients, you've got big clients as well, but helping those people navigate what they need to, because you're one of the people that makes a difference in what happens. So well done.
Yeah, thank you. And the same for you. I know I'd speak for many of my clients and just listeners here from a small business perspective that there should be lots of thanks going to people like you that are willing to put your neck on the line, face cameras, face newspaper articles, and speak for the smaller business employers out there in that industry. So thank you for that as well.
You're welcome.
Philabilla, thank you.
Thank you.